Hello everyone, it's Richard Lewis here with another video, and I've got to apologise for having a few days off. You might be able to tell, but I've been a bit under the weather. I've had an infection in my eye, which has ruptured my cornea. I can't actually see out my left eye at the moment. It's all cloudy and fucked up in there, and it's pretty sore still, and I had a fever and everything, so I've been just bedridden. But obviously the show must go on. There's lots going on in the world that I want to address on this channel. And I'm going to start by revisiting the PewDiePie situation, which still left me baffled. Now, this video is speculation, I suppose, would be a fine way to describe it. And usually I wouldn't engage in idle speculation. I think certainly the mainstream media do a very good job of just throwing things out there with no factual basis. But there's the pieces of a great big jigsaw puzzle relating to the PewDiePie hit job are out there. They're there before us, and I don't have the wherewithal or the brains, evidently, to put it all together or to know where to dig. I've been kind of digging around it, poking around it with a fork, and I think I'm on to something, and I wonder if somebody will sort of pick up the torch and run with it and kind of get conclusive evidence for what I suspect has happened. So just as a recap, in case you missed it, you'll recall that PewDiePie was recently accused of anti-Semitism for using, well, not really much. I mean, I suppose the key stickler would be making someone hold up a sign saying, you know, death to all Jews. Which was perhaps a poorly executed joke, just to show what people will do for money, effectively. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's not a big deal. To try and infer anti-Semitism from that in isolation seems ridiculous. To then go through all of his videos, like the Wall Street Journal did, and specifically Ben Fritz did, and sort of try and, you know, find images of him, you know, raising his arm and to do all these pathetic things to try and look like he is a sustained anti-Semite is even more ludicrous. It boggles the mind. Well, the upshot was that him and the studio he was part of, Maker Studios, which is owned by Disney, parted ways. Then news started breaking about something that really got me thinking, because what happened kind of makes me wonder if PewDiePie was effectively the victim of a smear campaign, a hit piece in the Wall Street Journal for financial reasons, and I'll lay out why I think this might be the case. Let's start with the email. I know a few people who are in the Maker Network. It's, you know, it's pretty big. And this is just the basic email that went round in the aftermath. As the creator space has evolved over the past few years, we have outgrown our original model of multiple tiers of service for our creator community. Now, that's interesting, because when you outgrow something, it makes it sound like you're getting bigger. I'm going to show you that's not the case at all. We are moving towards a more targeted approach to our creator relationships. As we work through the changes, we'll reach out to you shortly with specific details how these changes might impact your relationship with the Maker Studio Network. Please feel free to contact us at, and then there's a link just for support tickets, with questions in the meantime. Thank you, Maker Studios team. I mean, obviously the Maker Studios is a big network. That's a very impersonal email that was sent around. I mean, you know, whoever was in it just got that. I mean, the link even looks pretty shit, like all, as if there's like a specific, you know, certain people get different levels of service. And then Polygon, who of course have been instrumental in leading the charge. Once the Wall Street Journal lit the torch paper, it was Polygon that really ran with it in the games press. Well, they ran a story that seemed to put a bigger context on it. More than 55,000 YouTubers were going to be cut from Maker's Studios, is reported on February the 23rd. Disney is set to lay off approximately 80 people, drop support for more than 55,000 YouTubers currently backed by its Maker Studios division. Let's just focus on the YouTubers for now. We'll get into this 80 people thing here. And you can see the Wall Street Journal is reporting the move has been a development since before PewDiePie made headlines last week for posting a series of videos to YouTube that featured anti-Semitic messages. Now, that detail is incredibly important because I think a lot of people have assumed that, oh, PewDiePie has killed the golden goose. He's fucked it up for all the other YouTubers and just because of the chronology of the stories. But that's not true at all. What's happened here is that this was always going to happen. They were always downsizing to this degree. And that, I believe, is why PewDiePie suddenly found himself the target of the attention of the Wall Street Journal, because obviously he's their prize asset, but that means he's got a big contract. He's got lots of money that they have to pay him. He's got power and influence. So how can we get rid of him? And again, I'll demonstrate why this might be a factor. Now, Maker Studios clearly had problems and have had problems for some time. When the news came through that these 55,000 YouTubers were being cut, Kotaku went out to try and cover what was going on. It said some YouTubers are overjoyed that Maker Studios is firing them. When news hit that Disney subsidiary Maker Studios has dropped support for over 59,000 YouTubers, the mood for many was less "I'm fired" and more "I'm free." YouTubers interviewed described their struggles against Maker's detached management, late payments, high fees and undeliverable features, painting the picture of an inflated network whose bubble may have popped. And as I said, you all remember when Disney purchased Maker Studios, you know, for $500 million in 2014. Well, you know, these are the signs of a company that's struggling. You know, I cover this a lot. I cover a lot of financial mismanagement in the work that I do, and late payments is a huge red flag. You know, if you've got solid cash flow and you're a working business, the money turns up on time religiously without any drama. It has to. I mean, this is the fundamental principles of, you know, business. Like, of you know, you do a service for us, we pay you for that service. And when money starts turning up late, that's usually a sign that, you know, they're having to get money moved through businesses, other businesses, or investment has to come in, or they're just having huge cash flow problems and they've got to wait for ad revenue to come in or sponsorships. It basically means the money isn't there. They have to wait for it to come in and then they have to disseminate it, who gets it, based on who's been waiting the longest. I mean, that's not a sign of a healthy and functioning business. And I'm incredibly surprised to learn that a Disney-owned property is operating in that manner. I mean, Disney, one of the hugest companies in the world, it's very kind of disconcerting, isn't it, that Maker Studios was failing quite so badly. So enter Ben Fritz. Now, for those of you who don't know who Ben Fritz is, obviously he's the Wall Street Journal that led the charge on this kind of character assassination of PewDiePie. He wrote the initial article. Now, Ben Fritz his title is film business reporter at the Wall Street Journal, but he is specifically assigned to Disney stories on behalf of the Wall Street Journal. You can see here, Ben Fritz covers the film business and media companies, including Disney. If you look at the Wall Street Journal, almost all of the coverage about Disney-related properties goes through Ben Fritz. That's his, again, what we call in journalistic terms, of the beat. You know, that is the area of expertise that you are expected to report upon. But Ben Fritz wasn't always a piece of shit hack. I mean, you know, we showed on the last video we did talking about PewDiePie that he joked himself in several instances, made inappropriate jokes about Jews and homosexuals and that kind of thing. I'm possibly even black people, if memory serves me correctly. He liked an edgy joke or two. But he also used to run a blog called Spin Sanity. He's wrote a best-selling book called All the President's Spin. This was a guy who used to operate as a media watchdog. This was a guy who used to call out of the media for doing the kind of things he's just done to PewDiePie. So he knows that what he did is wrong. And there's proof of that. I mean, quite explicitly here in you know, the blog Spin Sanity, there was, we found this. This was tweeted at me by one of my wonderful followers that make my research job a hell of a lot easier. And thanks very much to whomever it was. This is June the 10th, 2004. Look. What is Spin Sanity? It's a website whose proprietors scrutinize statements by our political leaders, candidates, journalists, and pundits for honesty, fairness, and rhetorical soundness. Each Thursday on the commentary page, the good folks at Spin Sanity will restore sanity to the spin of statements from both the right and the left. This week, misquotations by the Washington Times and unacceptably harsh anti-GOP talk from liberals. Quotations out of context, just as bad as making it up. Well, all of the hit piece on PewDiePie was removed from context. That was the whole thing about it, that they deliberately took stuff that were jokes in the kind of framework of a comedy piece, and they just took one part of that joke in isolation and called it anti-Semitism. You know, they went through the videos and found, you know, they even talked about the Leslie Jones stuff as if he was racist. And he didn't even say Leslie Jones looked like a gorilla, which is what was reported, that he had directly compared it to it. He used a program that, for when he typed Harambe in, for some reason was using the picture of Leslie Jones. I assume through some sort of algorithm or machine learning, but that's not PewDiePie's doing. He didn't fucking, do you know what I mean? He's not specifically said this lady looks like a gorilla, which would make you wince, right? You would think, ooh, but that might be going a bit too far. He didn't do that, and so the Wall Street Journal, they really tried to lay it on thick. The old Ben Fritz, the Ben Fritz of 2004. Would be absolutely ashamed of the conduct of Ben Fritz in 2017. Now, I don't think Ben Fritz has undergone a huge personality change. I don't think that's actually realistic to expect that from people. It does happen. But I think for the most part, your core values stay the same once you're an adult and as you move through your adult life. And if anything, it gets harder as you get older. You know, in my experience at least, to remove those core values. It becomes harder to be somebody different, to change. You know, you've heard the expression, can't teach an old dog new tricks, which may not be entirely appropriate in this instance to make the point that I'm saying, but I think a little bit of it stands true. Now, one interesting thing is that Ben Fritz in 2007 married Alicia Kirk. And Alicia Kirk is a writer. She works on several, and has worked on several CBS TV shows. It's a shame it wasn't ABC. It would be more of a slam dunk because Disney doesn't own CBS. I mean, they have good relationships with that network, but ABC is the Disney-owned network. But she has worked for Disney, Ben Fritz's wife. And that was before they were married, sure. Oh, look, a Logan advert. How wonderful. I'm excited to see that movie. Alicia Kirk here is the wife of Ben Fritz. And you will notice there is one thing that kind of leaps out, right? You know, I don't watch a lot of these shows. I've never watched Rizzoli and Isles. I don't think I've ever watched Without a Trace. I think I might have watched Criminal Minds when I was fucking incredibly bored. But here, look, Bambi 2. The sequel nobody wanted. Well, Alicia Kirk was responsible for this. It's not even a sequel. It takes place in the middle. Anyway, whatever. Fuck that. But the bottom line is, obviously, she did the screenplay for Bambi 2 for Disney. Now, this is perhaps, you know, it came out in 2006. It might not look like a big deal. I've worked as an editor before. If my wife had worked for a company and my beat was writing about that company, I'd have to recuse myself. I'd need to change what I wrote about because, sure, you might have insight and ties, but it's also very easy to make allegations of conflict of interest, cronyism, nepotism, whatever you want to call it, when you have a partner who has worked for a big media company that you have to write about. Maybe you want her to do Bambi 3 one day. So this might inform your reporting. And these conflict, a good editor detects these conflict of interests and will pull people from stories. Now, it is a fine line. I'm not saying this means anything in isolation. But again, like I say, it's one piece of this bigger puzzle, right? That something's very off here. Because, as I said, these videos existed for ages. Why now? And the answer, of course, lies in, well, Maker Studios was going under. They wanted to downsize. Disney weren't happy with their involvement in YouTube. And I'm going to show you that Maker Studios was definitely failing. Now, obviously, we saw the reports of the 80 employees. That's a significant number, by the way, for this YouTube network. And here we go. This is a report here. Maker Studios' latest round of layoffs claims 80. But just to show you how far back the issues were, you can see in the opening paragraph, 30 employees had gone in July, back in the summer of 2016. And you can see here in December, Disney folded Maker's digital operations into its content and media business division, run by Andrew Sugarman, EVP Publishing and Digital Media at the, is it, sorry, Executive Vice President of Publishing and Digital Media at the Disney Consumer Products and Interactive Media. So the plan was to shift the focus of Maker short form content to build a digital media network targeting millennials and kids. And you can see the quote here to back that up. We're building a digital media network of Disney and non-Disney content for kids and millennials on the platform they use every day. For advertisers, this network offers mobile, video, short-form content, micro-content, and influencers all at scale. The company did not comment on the layoffs. Now, there's also a little bit here talking about, again, the acquisition for $500 million, with additional payouts of millions more if the company reached undisclosed financial targets. Whatever those numbers were, Maker didn't make them. So they had this bonus scheme in for people involved in Maker. If we make X amount of money, X amount of profit, we'll share those profits with you. Well, they didn't make them. So again, more proof this is a failing business. And the Bob Iger-run Disney ended up paying out $198 million, including about $100 million for the fiscal year that ended in early October 2015. So we can see Maker is struggling. It's been a huge financial sink for Disney, and it hasn't really delivered what they want. Now, on top of that, their target is children and millennials. Well, I mean, once that, I mean, mentally, I think there's a lot of similarities. But, you know, I think when you use the term millennial, you're not talking about somebody just from that generation. You're talking about a very specific type of person. You're talking about someone with a very specific political outlook, a very specific way of engaging with the internet and media, a very specific set of values. And obviously, children, well, PewDiePie isn't child appropriate and never has been, really, for as long as I have followed him. I never really thought of him as a children's entertainer. I suppose that maybe some of the stuff he did was a little bit kid friendly, but more teenager, you know, certainly and beyond. And he's still a young guy himself, you know? So again, it comes back to this question. Well, hang on, how bad was Maker failing? And why would you need to kill off PewDiePie? Well, I'm gonna tell you. Check this out. Report from TechCrunch. And this was quite surprising to me because I don't follow a lot about the YouTube companies and, you know, how it all works. But PewDiePie now has his own YouTube network within Maker Studios. Report from start of 2016. And this is interesting. PewDiePie is launching his own multi-channel network called Revel Mode. You may remember that PewDiePie was part of Make Studios, Disney's successful MCN. PewDiePie isn't really parting ways with Disney. PewDiePie is working with Make Studios for this new MCN. Revel Mode is an imprint of Make Studios, with Felix Kjellberg, aka PewDiePie, in charge. And this is, again, he has the most popular YouTube channel with 41.6 million subscribers. And he talks about the other people he has on the network. And this, to me, says that they did a contract negotiation. They did a contract negotiation somewhere at the end of 2015 or the start of 2016. And PewDiePie said, you know, I'm not happy with this original agreement. I want my own network. I want more power, more prominence, more influence within Maker. And they said, okay, well, you're our biggest asset by far. So here you, so we'll give it to you. That's going to be part of the agreement. And that's what, you know, I'll bet dollars to donuts that's what happened. So this is a new contract. And the contracts of these size, this stature, they last many years. And there's a lot of money involved. You know, you're making PewDiePie not now just the face of a brand, but an actual influencer within your corporate structure. A decision maker. Now, the relationship between PewDiePie and Disney hasn't always been great. And that probably doesn't surprise you. I mean, I think one thing I'll definitely say about PewDiePie is he's always had an awareness of his size and influence and how kind of almost redundant a lot of the stuff that's been built up around YouTube is for that sort of core YouTube experience of just a guy talking direct to his audience and skipping out all the middleman, the spin and the bullshit. He's always had a very acute understanding of that, whatever you think about his content. Now, here we see, back shortly after Maker was purchased in 2014, you can see there was talk he may leave and launch his own network. So this is back when he had only 31 million subscribers. And you can see, partnered with Polaris, the YouTube, the game-focused arm of top YouTube network Maker Studios. And there's an interesting little anecdote here when he talks about how Disney sent people dressed as stormtroopers, because obviously they own all of the Lucasfilm properties too, to film a Star Wars themed video. And he said, first of all, they got upset when they found out that there was no specific room for them to change clothes. And then they didn't agree to do basically anything in the video because it was not okay with the Star Wars universe. So again, PewDiePie had some controversial ideas about what he wanted the stormtroopers to do. They didn't agree to that. It all turned into chaos and it took a very long time. Finally, we ended up with something that they were going to edit, but it was so bad I had to do it over and edit it myself. Furthermore, I don't want PewDiePie to be some kind of trademark that I lose control over. So he suddenly started talking about, you know, leaving and making his own network. So they've always had this kind of fractious relationship. And I think the only reason that he's been stuck around is, you know, here's the money. Well, we need you, so we keep signing these big contracts, like the one evidenced there with Revel Mode. So let me just give you the theory about what's happened here. And I'm going to use some of my own experiences and knowledge of how media works, having been a journalist and worked specific beats in the past. Let me tell you that if I was a company and I had a failing business, and within that failing business, there was one huge star, one guy who had a contract that if we were to sever it, would cost us a fortune due to the length, the specific terms. Whatever the severance package would be for PewDiePie, it would be millions. It would be massive. So if I did have a company like that, and I did have somebody like that within the company, it might behoove me to plant a story or to have a word with a friendly journalist and say, hey, could you specifically look into whether or not we've got grounds to remove this guy based on clauses within his contract. Now, again, keep in mind, this is all hypothetical. I'm not saying Ben Fritz did this. I'm not saying Disney did this. This is just a hypothetical situation. But let's just say that the company in that position then said, well, actually, one of the grounds on which we can remove this star would be a morals clause. I know from working in media myself, you know, I'm on TV, I've got a morals clause. Sports stars have a morals clause. If I engage in any behavior that would disparage the network, my employer, I mean, I'm instantly terminated. The relationship is severed. The morals clause is one of those non-negotiable grounds for termination. So, hypothetically, let's say if that star was engaged in something that you could make look inarguably to have violated the morality clause within the contract, you would be able to immediately terminate them without paying any money whatsoever. And the good news is, because this is a friendly journalist who's worked your beat multiple times, has insight into the company, it just looks like it would have naturally sprung forth, perhaps from conversations and meetings. It would be the ultimate way to save yourself millions and millions of dollars. And if your business was failing and you were making mass redundancies and having to cut anywhere between 55 and 59,000 support for that many people as well because you wanted to downsize, all that money saved is a big deal. So I'm not saying that's what happened in this specific Disney PewDiePie Ben Fritz instance. But it is interesting when you look at the history, the chronology, the relationships that all of a sudden, predicated on videos that had been out for a while, PewDiePie was an anti-Semite. Makes you think. So anyway, that's what I wanted to put out there. I have no idea if anyone is kind of thinking the same thing that I was. All very hypothetical. And as I said, I don't usually do videos of this kind, but I think the PewDiePie situation is so important and so interesting that some, this kind of character assassination would take place through a mainstream media outlet. I think we need to be mindful about exactly why this may or may not have occurred. Anyway, thanks a lot for watching this video. I will see you on the next one.